Mr. Cochran, Reel 7. We were talking about your time on the Dove. Now, you're saying that they get an hour in the morning, perhaps, and then they get some time. How much sleep would they get in the afternoon, then?
I'd say 2 to 3 hours. Because he had us cleaning the ship. And don't forget the motorboat's crew was running around taking officers ashore and, you know.
So, what effect did the tiredness have?
It had a lot of effect on us.
How did it affect you?
Well, many a night you'd be up there and you were in the cold all the time. You never moved off that forecastle head. And what I'm coming to now, there was one night we stayed in harbour, the 15th, but there was 2 ABs off our ship had to get the hammock and a steaming bag, and they had to go aboard another ship that was going out because they were 2 ABs short. So they lost their night in. They went out on this ship, done the same operation on there. And when he came back to our ship, the first thing he said to me was, "Scouse, that ship there, their pom-pom's crew doesn't stay on that folk's ladder all night like you." I said, "Well, what did he do?" He said, "When the weather's rough, he allows them to go behind B-gun. There was like a door on the port side that you went down to our mess deck through a hatch, see, down the companion ladder. And they allowed all the pom-pom's crew to stay in there out of the weather."
Now, what was it like for you then on that? Tell us what it was like being on that pom-pom all night.
Honest to God, I used to say, the way we worked there, I used to look right forward, and I had one ammunition lad looking on the starboard side. We were the extra lookouts, and the other lad would look on the port side. And you'd be falling asleep. Even when it was too rough, our MCBs wouldn't come out with us. We'd be on our own. No MCBs, just the 15 of us. So they used to say, "Right, well, there won't be no E-boats." But we were still kept on that forecastle head. Oh, doesn't matter how rough it was, our pom-pom crew was still on our forecastle head. And as I say, I had very little sleep on there. Very little.
Now, do you remember any of the incidents from the sort of clashes you had with the E-boats?
Yeah.
Tell us some of them.
What happened was, I always wore a football whistle around my neck. You had your disc with your name on and seaman. And I used to wear a football whistle around that. Well, this particular night in question, we'd sank a couple of E-boats.
What do you remember of that before, you know?
Well, it was a very heavy night. We were really in action practically all night long. And the news had come through that we'd sank a couple of E-boats, and you could see...
Do you mean your ship had or someone else had amongst the force?
Amongst the force, and we'd hit them as well. But they reckon, amongst the force, they reckon we'd got about 3 or 4 E-boats between us. But we'd definitely hit one. We knew that. And, it was a pretty dark night, this particular night. And I heard this whistle blowing. And I said, "There's somebody out there." And then one of the lads said, that's a whistle blowing," he said. I said, "I thought he heard something." Because I'd taken my headphones off for a few minutes, you know. And he said, "That's a whistle. That's definitely a whistle." Anyway, we picked up 2 E-boat crew, 2 Germans. And as soon as they picked him up, they took him in our mess deck and took all the wet clothes off him and give him that kai we had, you know, the drinking chocolate. Very thick. But it was good. It kept you warm out of a night. So they give him that and soup. And they kept their eyes on him and that, and made sure, like, they never got a mischief or anything. That was the PO in charge of the damage control. He was a seaman PO. He kept his eyes on him, you see.
But it was you that heard the whistle.
We heard the whistle. The pom-pom's crew heard it. And because, as I say, at first, when we started reporting things, at first, the lookouts on the bridge, with them all being ordinary seamen, this was the first ship, and they'd been only going from Belfast to Liverpool. They hadn't been used to reporting every, you know. And at first, like, they thought we were, ours was a joke, but everybody took us real serious then, and they realised we were the ears and eyes of that ship. And
how did you communicate with the bridge, and what were the headphones for?
I had like, it was like this. It was like a band over your head like that, and two plugs in your ears, and they had a mouthpiece, and you just spoke in it. Well, at first you're talking to the lookout, you see, and they wouldn't report. I'd say, tell them. I was going mad. I was. Tell them that's not one of our aircraft, or, you know. And
it wouldn't go to the gunnery officer. It went to the lookout.
The lookouts were at first. They had, round where they were, they had all the earphones where they were. And they were on phones, you see. So in the end, one day I told the gunner, I said, it's Fred Carno, this. I said, you better get this sorted out. And it was the gunner who actually done it. So after that, I used to be in touch with the officer of the day then on the bridge. Yeah. Because...
Would they tell you what to fire at, or were you just left to yourself, your target selection and the rest of it?
No, what happened was... when you left port first of a night, he'd say so-and-so gun, chest guns. And what it was... There was a mask of a ship that had been sunk as it went out the harbour. So the guns would fire at them. This was every gun, testing the gun, as you say.
Just a couple of rounds?
Just test your gun. And then when you were in action with the E-boats, as soon as you got the alarm, B-gun would fire a star shell. He'd put a line up in the sky. It'd be like daylight then. And you could see what was going on ahead of you. And then the gun officer would tell you then.
Through the headphones?
Yeah. Pick whatever target you could, like, you know. And you were telling them. You were in communication all the time, you see.
With the gunnery officer. So he could speak to you when he wanted to.
Yeah. I'd say to him, such a target and that. And he'd tell me then, you know, if you think you can hit it, you engage it, you know. Yeah.
Any other incidents from the fighting off, you know, during that period while you were at Ryde? Sounds a rough period.
There was another time, our radar, we had very good radar on the ship. He picked up, we couldn't see it, they picked up a floating crane being towed down. And we actually engaged it and sank it. Three-inch actually engaged.
A German floating crane? Off,
yeah.
Off where?
Coming down off Le Havre. And the three-inch actually engaged it and sank it. Yeah.
What do you remember of that?
Well, we didn't see it because... It was a dark noise and it was out. But the radar had picked it up. The star shell opened fire on him. Lit it up, and then the A-gun just left fire. And the beauty of it with A-gun, they were all young, ordinary seamen on her. And the captain of her was a two-badge AB, acting petty officer. he wasn't the Navy for a year, see. He was acting for a year, and then after a year, he'd get the PO's rig. And another thing about that, which I'm coming to in a minute, the motor boats, this petty officer of Hagen, him and his crew, whenever that motorboat was lowered or fetched aboard, that gun's crew done it all. Day, night, they were the only ones who was responsible. And I'll come to that later on. There's a story later on about it to come to, about the guns, about the boats.
So where are we with D-Day? Is this during the D-Day period?
No, that's leading up.
Yeah, that's right, okay.
Now, before D-Day, we went to Pompey.
Portsmouth?
Yeah, went to Portsmouth Harbour. We were in there for a couple of days and we...
This would be in June, would it?
Yes. Went to Portsmouth. Got new ropes and various things. And... While we were in Portsmouth Harbour, the chief stoker got a... The first time I'd seen it in the Navy, we always had the divers where you put the big boots on and the gear and everything. But this was a bottle on your back and a clip on your nose. And the chief stoker had one of these and he said to this leading stoker, put this on and go over the water and test it out. And the water was filthy in Pompey at this particular time. I'm glad it wasn't me. And he put his gear on, over his overalls, the bottle and the thing on his nose, went down to test it out, and it worked all right. This is the first time I'd seen it used in the Navy. It was only a dummy run, like testing it, but it was good. Anyway, we're in Portsmouth, and on the Saturday, one of the lads come on the mess deck. He said, there's all kinds of officers having a meeting on board us. Now, we were only a frigate, and they were all RMVR officers. And yet, there was all kinds of officers holding meetings on us.
Did you know what it was about?
So, apparently, it was about D-Day. And what happened for D-Day, we actually sailed from Pompey at D-Day, for D-Day. And what they done with us, as I said, we used to get paid once a month, and we used to have money belts with our notes in. Well, everybody was, you laugh at this, but it's true. Everybody was issued for D-Day with two condoms. That was to put your pound notes in and put them in your waist belt to keep them dry. And this went on. Anyway, halfway across to D-Day, we all got a leaflet each explaining what was happening. And then he told us we were going to landings and all this. Now, what happened was, we got there and we seen all the big ships, Rodney, Roberts, the Monitor, Black Prince, all these. They were all opening fire and everything.
What were you doing?
And our job was to keep the U-boats away again. That was our job, not bombarding. So, when daylight came, all as we'd done is just stopped the anchor and all the frigates, and they had like a shield around the ships that we were using as an harbour, you know, the merchant ships. And that was our job, to protect them, you see. protect emerging ships. Now, this went on for a couple of days, then overnight, what you'd do, you'd weigh anchor and you'd go then chasing the U-boats, trying to keep the U-boats away from. Anyway,
did you see many?
We had a few skirmishes with them. And after a couple of nights of this, one day we went back to Pompey. I don't know what for. We just went back and come back again in the night time. Our usual patrol. Anyway, a couple of nights after we'd been back and dropped the anchor of a day and patrol of a night, while we're on patrol, I actually seen these German planes, never forget it, straight ahead, and they were dropping mines ahead of us. So I got on the phone right away and told the officer there, the gunnery officer, and they seen for themselves that there were mines being dropped. So we had to drop the anchor then. We couldn't proceed any further. So what happened? They had to bring our minesweepers at Dale Bay to clear the mines. Ahead of us to clear the mines. And the minesweepers at that time were those new ones, the fiberglass ones that we had in service, you know. But that's what happened. So We kept on our patrols of a night, keeping E-boats away from the ships and that. And then, all of a sudden, it happened right out of the blue. It happened to be a moonlight night at the time. We seen three of our landing minesweepers ahead of us, one after the other getting sunk. And nobody knew what it was, just an explosion. And we didn't have a clue what it was. And anyway, coming back to our motorboat, the captain fired a motor. The next day, what he'd done, he'd landed our motorboat, and his job was to go round the harbour where all the ships were, where we were using as a harbour like. And all the debris that was floating, they had to pick it all up, because the word had got round that there was a human torpedo, see. So what he wanted to do, all the debris that you used to see floating past you over night and day for all the wreckages and that, that was all picked up. And they're hoping that in the night time we could see any human torpedoes, you see, instead of debris. Anyway, that particular night in question, the captain ordered the coxswain to stay on board the ship of the motorboat, and the petty officer who was in charge of the damage control, he went coxswain of the motorboat, and he had a revolver and an axe, and the two AB's bowmen and stern sheetmen in the boat, and the stoker who'd manned the engine, they all had an hatchet each. And the idea was they were going to go ahead of the ship as near as the French coast as possible, and they were going to try and intercept one of these human torpedoes, because we knew nothing about them, you see, up till then. And the idea was, with the hatchet, Blakey's Conning Tower or whatever it was, which it, in the end it was a perspex dome, like, break that and capture them and hope to get hold of the secrets of the human torpedo. Anyway, the boat was out all night, and he never came across anybody. So our plan never worked. We never got one. Anyway, a couple of days later, when we were on patrol, and ahead of us again, a couple more ships sunk. So the captain ordered the motorboat to be lowered to pick up survivors, you see. Well, as I said, it was the same crew who lowered and hired that boat. Now, I didn't see what happened because I'm on the pump on my action stations, but this is what the gunner told me. All of a sudden, it's nearing dawn. And all of a sudden, the ship stops, our ship. And my ammunition number pulled me by the hand and said, "Look, Scouse." And I looked over the ship's side like that. And there was this human torpedo coming at us. Now, it must have been fired at the starboard quarter, you see. And what happened was, as we stopped, so just past our bows, right, and missed us, the gunner come up to me later on when all this had died down. He said, "Do you hear what happened?" I said, "No, sir." I said, "All I know." He said, "Well, what happened was, when the motorboat was being lowered, the forward fall jammed, fouled. And the after fall was going down, and the boat was like that on an angle." He said, "And this young ordinary seaman, he was from an orphanage in Leicester. I liked the lad, a lovely lad. He got his knife round his waist, they used to wear like I did, off his lanyard, and he cut the fall, so the boat went down quick like that. And they all called him a stupid. But the gunner said he'd done right," he said, "because he allowed the boat to go properly down instead of being on an angle and the lads falling out. But with the captain seeing the way it was, he stopped the ship. And in so doing, it missed us." So the captain later on told us at divisions on the Sunday that had he not stopped the ship, it would have hit us amidships. It would have hit us amidships there. So the human torpedo must have been on our starboard quarter, and he's fired it to hit us amidships, see. But luckily, the skipper stopped the ship. But that was only through that boat fouling. And as I said, it was the same crew who were responsible for hiring and lowering, and they'd done it all times of night, so it's just one of those things.
And they got it wrong that time.
Yeah. Just one of those things. Yeah. Yeah.
So you were lucky?
We're lucky, yeah. Yeah, definitely. It missed us.
Now, is, you know, any other stories from that time that you remember?
Yeah, another time. We were coming back. Well, after D-Day, another time, we were coming back to ride. Only for the night and then back out again, you see. But this particular day, we'd been in action, and it was one of our torpedo boats, MTBs, sinking by the bows. And they'd abandoned ship, it was sinking, there was no one there. So I jumped aboard there in the daylight, it was daylight. I waited till we were going down to meet there, and I jumped on board. And he passed me a wire. And what I done from our starboard side, I took the wire right round, back aft the starboard side of that.
Around the MTB?
Yeah. And they give me another wire then, and we done the same again. Round the MTB. And then we put two more around the port side, more or less lifting her up. And we told her for a while. And the idea was, in my mess, forward, there was a lad from Manchester, a middle-aged man, but he was a proper carpenter. And he made me a lovely wooden case. And my idea was, if the chief stoker could have got a pump on her and pumped enough water out, this chap might have been able to, because the wood MCBs, he might have been able to patch it up, you see. That was my going through our, the gunner in my mind, you see, the two of us. But unfortunately, she took that much water in. In the end, we had to let the ropes go and she sank. But we told her for a while, we tried to save her. Yeah.
So what else do you remember? What about the time you did sink a human torpedo?
Yes. Well, what had happened, we were on patrol and we'd seen these minesweepers getting sunk ahead of us. Now, up till then, I'd never seen a human torpedo. I knew what the Challenge ones was with two men on. And it'd be about dawn, it'd be. And we could see these survivors coming towards us. And I had my earphones on. And they were waving and shouting. So I turned around to the lads and I said, what is happening there? And he said, there's a human torpedo amongst them. So I looked and then I seen this. It was just a perspex dome. That's all you could see amongst them. And you could actually see the chap's head and shoulders. And straight away I shouted to the bridge. I told him what I could see. And I said, do not alter course. If you alter course, you're going to give him a target to hit. I said, while we're going straight into him, he can't. I said, and I can hit him without hitting any of the survivors. Can I have permission to fire a short burst? And he said, yes. So I fired a short burst and then stopped. And I could see, as he was coming nearer, he was over to one side. Definitely killed him in there. And he went right down our starboard side. I actually seen him going down. And as we turned, he started sinking. And this leading torpedo man, he was a West Country lad, I knew him very well, a one badge bloke like myself. He set a shallow depth charge right away and blew it up. Because with it only just being below the surface, it was dangerous. You know, it'd be like hitting a mine, wouldn't it? So he blew it up. And the amazing thing was, when everything had settled down, you know what we've seen on the surface? A square rubber life belt. It must have been had that. That must have been in the human torpedo. And that's the only thing we found. Just a square where ours was around our life belt. This was a square one. Yeah. That's the only thing we've seen on the surface.
But do you know the date this happened?
I didn't know the time, but they reckon it's from July the 7th and the 8th of the night. Like, in other words, we'd been at sea on the 7th, but it was in the morning of the 8th.
Of July.
Yeah, I didn't know at the time. And I've often wondered, was that the first one where... See, the captain-class frigates, this is the annoying part about it. I've been to 3 captain-class frigates associated meetings in Warwick. And this time, I've got the papers there to show you. He's on about all the U-boats that sank and who sank them. But he's just said we sank 3 human torpedoes. He doesn't say what ship's done it, though. I've got the papers there.
You can see. Duff sank at least one of them.
At least one of them. And he hasn't put it on. I've fetched it over to show you. I've got them there for you.